It's Tuesday, September 22nd. Americans are arguing over a seat. They're about to be arguing over a name. We start here. Ruth Bader Ginsburg's family is preparing to bury her, but the job interviews to replace her have already begun.
Just happens to be, well, from Florida and Hispanic.
How this process works in the most unusual of years and who's on the president's shortlist. Health experts were encouraged by the latest guidance on coronavirus until it was wiped off the website.
You know, everybody's looking at this saying, are you kidding me?
What a CDC flip-flop means for your safety. And the meme is don't be suspicious. Well, tell that to U.S. regulators.
Seems like China, unfortunately, still has a lot to do with it.
What an on-again, off-again deal for TikTok means for the U.S. and China down the line. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Over the next several days, the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be everywhere in Washington, literally and figuratively. Starting tomorrow morning, after a small ceremony with family and friends, the justice's casket will be stationed at the U.S. Supreme Court outdoors so that members of the public can safely pay their respects. On Thursday, she'll be moved to the U.S. Capitol, where she'll lie in state before being buried next to her husband Marty at Arlington National Cemetery.
Five women are being looked at and vetted very carefully.
While all this is happening, President Trump says he will be considering whom he should replace her with. And he could make an announcement within hours of Ginsburg going into the ground.
I would say on Friday or Saturday, I'll be announcing the pick.
So how does that affect how Americans see this whole firestorm? And in the longer term, how does this extraordinary moment determine the shape of the court? Who is going to replace a legal liberal icon? Let's go to ABC's chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Carl, this morning. John, what are you hearing? What is the plan for President Trump at this point to fill the seat?
Well, it's certainly on a fast track, Brad. We haven't seen something like this in a long time. But there were some talk that he might not even do in-person interviews. Obviously, he's got his list that's already been compiled. He's got a number of candidates that have already been vetted. But I am told the president has made it clear that he does want to talk to his shortlist candidates before he makes his final decision.
Have you talked to any of them yet?
I have. I have today and yesterday, day before.
And those really at the top of the list, and I would put these two above all others. Would you have Amy Coney Barrett, who is somebody the president has previously suggested might be his next pick, somebody he's already nominated and put on the Circuit Court of Appeals.
In 2017, the devout Catholic was pressed by Democrats about her stance on Roe v. Wade during her confirmation hearing to serve on the federal bench.
I would commit, if confirmed, to follow unflinchingly all Supreme Court precedent.
And you have Barbara Lagoa, who is somebody who was just confirmed by the Senate to the Circuit Court back in December.
What made her a finalist, and what might tip the scales her direction?
Well, she's excellent. She's Hispanic. She's a terrific woman from everything I know. I don't know her. Florida. We love Florida.
So it just happens to be, well, from Florida and Hispanic, Cuban-American, former Chief Justice of the Florida Supreme Court.
It is the role of judges to apply, not to alter, the work of the people's representatives. And it is the role of judges to interpret our Constitution and statutes as they are written.
You know, you have one candidate that would absolutely fire up Christian conservatives, anti-abortion activists. That would be Amy Coney Barrett.
The 48-year-old Barrett is a favorite among conservatives after previous statements on Obamacare's birth control allowance, calling it a grave violation of religious freedom.
And one who, you know, could, he believes, potentially move the needle a bit in Florida and maybe among Hispanics.
How important to you personally is the Supreme Court for when you vote? I imagine you voted for him last time?
Yeah.
So how important was it to you last time and how important is it to you now?
It's very important the last time, and this time it's twice as important.
Hey, John, is the White House worried about, you know, we've talked about how Republicans are seemingly going back on what they said 4 years ago. Is the White House worried about public perception at all, either as far as election prospects or, you know, a Republican senator might go rogue in the next several weeks? Like, do they have any concerns about how this plays out?
they're remarkably unconcerned about the optics of pushing this through when, of course, Merrick Garland was blocked last time by Republicans.
President Trump's nominee for this vacancy will receive a vote on the floor of the Senate.
They see an opening, and the president's certainly within his constitutional authority to make a nomination, and the Republicans are in control. They want to push it through. There are... You know, questions about whether or not they can hold everybody together. I don't see. We've had two Republicans say that they don't want this to happen.
Already two, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, say this decision should be up to the next president.
They can still afford to lose one more. They have a tie-breaking vote in Mike Pence. Oh. It's unclear if they are going to lose one. On one hand, from the Republican point of view, it's a welcome change of subject from COVID-19 and the president's handling of the pandemic.
And the latest ABC News Ipsos poll shows Trump's approval rating for handling the COVID-19 pandemic among registered voters is at around 35% compared to 65% who disapprove.
But it certainly, for the Republicans, also complicates at least one major Senate race. That's Cory Gardner.
After dodging that question this weekend, Colorado's Republican senator now indicates he will not delay a vote on the president's Supreme Court nominee.
He can't really afford to lose any, you know, hardcore Trump supporters out there, but he also needs some swing voters if he's going to win in a state that has been trending Democrat. But there's not much time here, Brad. So the question is, can they get through hearings, a committee vote, a debate on the floor, and a full vote of the Senate before November 3rd? That is very much up in the air.
Leader McConnell put the Senate on pause for over 4 months while COVID-19 devastated our country. But now he will move earth and heaven and ignore all principle and consistency to install a new Supreme Court justice who could rip away Americans' health care in the middle of a pandemic.
And then, you know, I mean, God only knows what's going to happen in this election, but if things go badly in this election and the Republicans lose the Senate and lose the White House, the question is, can a lame duck Republican majority in the Senate confirm a lame duck Republican president's pick for the Supreme Court? Well, there's nothing technically to prevent it, but you know, that would be truly in unprecedented territory there.
In fact, the former press secretary for Hillary Clinton, Brian Fallon, was tweeting hours after RBG's death, if Republicans ran this pick through, we should add seats to the court. There's no other way. So this is not necessarily just a hardcore liberal thing. This is where a good chunk of the party now finds itself, whether adding seats or even adding states when we're talking about the Electoral College. Jonathan Carl in Washington. Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Unless there is a huge lag in reported numbers that we have not seen before, today is the day America likely marks 200,000 deaths from COVID-19. That means since this moment in late May.
So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative.
100,000 Americans have died since then.
My uncle on May 25th, his son-in-law on the 27th, then his mother-in-law on June 1st, then an aunt that passed away in Mexico on June 2nd.
All from COVID.
And as temperatures drop over the next several weeks, more Americans are about to find themselves indoors, sharing the same air, which is a problem since we've seen mounting evidence that this coronavirus is effectively airborne. In fact, if you went to the CDC's website this past Friday, it would have told you that this virus can remain suspended in tiny little particles spreading way farther than 6 feet. But yesterday morning, that guidance was mysteriously gone, leading to more questions about what and who are dictating the government's response during this unprecedented loss of life. Let's get ABC's Anne Flaherty in here. She covers federal agencies. Anne, basic question, is this virus airborne or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why we wear masks. I mean, airborne is sort of this, it's kind of a tricky term. I mean, there's two ideas here. One is that when you're talking to somebody, there's these large droplets that will go into the air right, that the other person can inhale. And that's how they think that the virus is mostly transmitted. Now, certainly when you cough and sneeze, that becomes even more airborne. Mm. The question really has been for months now whether or not it lingers in the air, which scientists do think it can happen to some degree.
You know, we're learning a lot about that now. I think that there certainly is
a degree of aerosolization.
But they don't know how far it can travel, and they don't know how efficient it is being airborne.
If you have any degree of aerosolization and you are in an indoor space where the air is being circulated, that it makes sense to assume that that is a much greater risk than if you are outside.
So these are all sort of questions that have been swirling around. And then that brings us to Friday when we looked at their website and there was some new guidance there that said there's increasing evidence that this transmission is happening.
Today, the flip-flop of information from the CDC continued, which isn't helping people trust this important agency.
Then fast forward to Monday, and all of a sudden it disappears from the website. So, you know, everybody's looking at this saying, are you kidding me? Basically, what happened to the guidance?
Wait. And they said they didn't mean to put it on the website, because like it's concerning if stuff's going on the CDC website in error. That's a problem. Even the bigger problem would be, and we've heard people speculate about this, are things that are scientifically sound getting wiped from government websites because somebody in the government doesn't want them there?
I mean, look, it's one of those things where nobody knows exactly what happened on this particular issue.
I hope some of you saw that our testing guidance has been updated. And some of you may have also noticed that over the weekend, we had a posting that was describing spread of COVID-19 possibly as an airborne pathogen.
We did hear from John Brooks, who is, is an epidemiologist at CDC. He's in charge of the COVID response. This isn't someone who Trump installed there to politically clean up the message. This is somebody who knows what he's talking about.
I just want to let you know that this was an early draft of a document that was presently undergoing scientific review. It wasn't intended to be posted. That was an error on the.
He has gone on the record as saying, you know, this is under scientific review. We didn't mean to put it up there.
That means that it can possibly be transmitted through the airborne route, but that this is not the main mode of transmission, that the main mode of transmission remains close exposure within that 6-foot circumference of a person who's infected.
So, you know, was it a mistake? I've been covering government for 20 years now. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of mistakes that can be made where people are trying to vet things and, moving the paper right around and so forth. So it wouldn't surprise me if this was just a mistake, but because of what has happened in recent weeks, of course, we're going to be skeptical and we're going to ask some serious questions and wonder, how could this possibly happen?
You have seen the reports about the White House saying that they want to bypass the CDC, have the coronavirus information sent directly to the White House. The administration is saying this instead of the CDC. You're the former acting director. Is this unprecedented?
But this example aside, you look at the broader picture of the Trump administration, and the White House has been very hands-on, to say the least, on the coronavirus message.
You know, I see this as a big red flag. You know, CDC has been sidelined throughout the response. They haven't been able to hold press conferences and talk directly to the public on a daily basis.
They want to sign off on television interviews, for example, when Dr. Fauci speaks.
And he's got this high approval rating, so why don't I have a high approval rating with respect, and the administration, with respect to the virus?
They don't like some of the information that the CDC has been putting out there. They've put political appointees in to sharpen the message. So we know that there has been a push to pressure the CDC to clean up what they're saying so that it sounds more politically palatable ahead of the election. And the CDC is pushing back here and saying, well, that's not what happened in this case, but you can understand why people are deeply skeptical.
Well, and the president has seemed to say that there are larger forces within the government, career officials, who often work against him to make him look bad or to undercut him. We saw him dispute what the CDC director was saying. Is there a sense that in the medical community there in Washington that there are people undermining the White House's agenda?
Well, actually, recently we've seen the opposite. On Monday, a Daily Beast report came out that one person working at the NIH for Dr. Fauci's office, his name is William Cruz, that he actually was writing for Red State. This is an online website.
That's like a conservative blog.
It's a conservative blog. It's a little bit more than that, though. It's got a lot of conspiracy theories on it. The writings that they tied to this gentleman, calling Fauci a mask Nazi, saying that he's undermining the ability for the United States to operate. just that they would have somebody inside of his office moonlighting essentially as kind of an online troll. It's sort of stunning.
And just so astounding that you still, months later, have these different realities, these dueling realities coming from people in the government describing how bad the issue is, let alone what needs to be done about it months into this pandemic. We'll see what happens as the months get colder as well. And Flaherty in Washington. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, what unites high schoolers and foreign policy wonks? They all want to know whether TikTok's really about to be banned. As they say, we on X Games mode after the break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you have TikTok on your phone and you open up the app, there are still videos there this morning, which means it has not been banned.
I'm going to have to see it to believe it.
When we last spoke about TikTok here, the Trump administration had said it would not be allowed in the U.S. as long as it was still owned by a Chinese-controlled company. Everyone thought Microsoft would buy it, but then TikTok turned them down, and in a surprise announcement said it would be sold to two U.S. companies, Oracle and Walmart, instead. Let's bring in our friend Luis Matsakis from Wired Magazine. Luis, the president said he was kind of weighing this deal late last week. What has happened since? Is TikTok good to go or not?
Not really. So over the weekend, Trump called this deal great for America.
They'll be hiring at least 25,000 people. It'll most likely be incorporated in Texas. It'll be a brand new company.
And it seemed like the green light, you know, Oracle put out a statement, TikTok put out a statement. It seemed like all celebration.
And hundreds of millions of users, and they'll be happy. So everybody will be happy. It's a severance.
And you said that's good because China's not going to have anything to do with it. But apparently ByteDance, which is the company in China, they say they're going to still own 80% of TikTok. So there will be Chinese involvement.
And then on Monday on Fox News, Trump said this deal would not go through if China had anything to do with it. And it seems like China, unfortunately, still has a lot to do with it.
And if we find that they don't have total control, then we're not going to approve the deal.
Okay.
So another aspect of this is that on Saturday at a campaign rally in North Carolina, Trump said that TikTok would give $5 billion to start an education fund to teach Americans about the real history of the U.S.
Real history of our country, the real history, not the fake history.
ByteDance and TikTok quickly said, we have no idea what the president is talking about. Walmart and Oracle later put out kind of a weird statement where they tried to bridge the gap here, and they said that they would do some sort of education project that would not cost $5 billion necessarily.
The president's claimed that Google is launching a coronavirus testing website, but tonight the reality check.
This is not even the first time the president has promised a tech company was doing something that it wasn't this year.
Google has 1,700 engineers working on this right now.
So at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, Trump said that Google was going to make this big website to track coronavirus cases and testing in the U.S., and that turned out to also be untrue.
Well, and just to run it back, Luis, ByteDance is based in China. That means that under their laws, China has enormous powers to get information about their company from them. And so the Trump administration is thinking, you know, from a national security standpoint, we don't want China, the Communist Party in China, going through Americans' personal information that they suck up through this app. Is that the right way of looking at it? And you know, where do you go from there then?
Yeah, so that's kind of the basic concern. So even before all of this happened, TikTok said that it was already keeping all the data on Americans in the U.S. with backups in Singapore. So that was the concern, is that the Chinese government could still get the data, even though it was already in the U.S., because ByteDance is beholden to the Chinese government since it's a Chinese company.
The security will be 100%. They'll be using separate clouds and a lot of very, very powerful security.
So I don't know if any of that's really resolved here. Oracle says that it will take over as the cloud provider. So, you know, the data will be stored still in the U.S. by a different company, now Oracle, and they'll take a stake in the company. But it's still going to be controlled by a Chinese entity. So it seems like there's a discrepancy there, and God only knows what will happen next.
Is it the Chinese government that's saying, hey, ByteDance, we don't want you to sell this stuff? Or is it ByteDance saying, no, we want a better deal. We're not giving away 51% of this company.
It's definitely the Chinese government. So recently, the Chinese government passed some new export rules that make it a lot harder for Chinese companies like ByteDance to export technology such as the algorithm that powers the TikTok app. So that's kind of thrown a wrench in the whole thing.
Oh, like to China, that's a bargaining chip. Like that's national security leverage there.
Yeah, basically they're saying that you need a special license if you want to take that technology out of the country. So that kind of threw a wrench into the whole thing, and I think that that's part of why Microsoft backed out, to be honest. But Oracle says that all the technology will be in the U.S. and it will be under the control of American investors. But ByteDance, you know, said on Chinese social media that that's not true and that there'll be no source code, no technology actually transferred. And basically, I think that what TikTok is realizing is that it's really hard to be a global company from China right now and possibly ever.
And so bottom line then, for the TikTokers out there or just for anyone who's interested in like global business, where does this leave TikTok? Like what is going to happen to them? What's your sense?
So the U.S. Commerce Department has extended the TikTok ban deadline by a week until September 27th. So that gives a few more days for all the parties here to get their story straight and to figure out what's going on.
The wildly popular app seeing a surge in downloads as the ban neared.
I've never received better news in my life.
Now, the app's users, like London Lazerson, who relies on the app as a means of income, are breathing a sigh of relief.
It's not really clear what will happen until then, and it's really notoriously hard to please Trump. So it's not clear if maybe these companies will be able to resolve it or if TikTok will actually end up banned in the U.S. We'll have to wait and see.
All right, that's Luis Metzeka. She's a staff writer for Wired covering China, which means at this point, TikTok is a big part of her beat. Luis, thanks so much for the insight.
Thanks for having me.
And one last thing. If the TikTok thing does happen, it is likely to be based in Texas. But there's another gig springing up that's about to create a lot more jobs really fast.
The bullet train connecting Houston to Dallas could finally become a reality. It's scheduled to break ground next year.
Yesterday, federal regulators approved a Texas plan to build a high-speed train between Houston and Dallas. This bullet train plan has been in the works for a while. It would travel over 200 miles an hour, turning a 4-hour car journey into a 90-minute train ride. Well, this approval basically paves the way for construction to begin next year and is predicted to generate 17,000 jobs over the next 6 years. Of course, these predictions have been made before.
The current project, as planned, would cost too much and respectfully take too long.
In 2008, California voters approved a measure to create a similar train between LA and San Francisco. It was hugely touted. Just like this one in Texas, it was supposed to not only link the big cities, but also agriculture centers in between. Wins for everyone. And yet construction did not begin for 7 years. Projected cost ballooned from $30 billion to nearly $100 billion. Currently, all work there is postponed except for a stretch in the middle of the state.
We do have the capacity to complete a high-speed rail link between Merced and Bakersfield.
Texas is hoping to change all of that, and in true Texas fashion, unlike its predecessors, it's relying on private companies to fund it, including investors from Japan and Europe. Now, climate activists have been arguing for more of these projects for years. Joe Biden, perhaps the candidate most associated with trains since Harry Truman's whistle stop tour, says he will sign bills creating routes just like this one. But meanwhile, it's Texas that is moving full steam ahead. To be a spoiler here, they still got to buy 60% of the land where these tracks are supposed to sit. I have a feeling real estate values might have just changed on this route recently. Start here tomorrow. Hey, by the way, if you have not followed us on Twitter or Instagram, you are missing out. Our producer Ariel Chester has created some really great audiograms of the day's best clips. It's a great way to share the show with people who you can tell are just too lazy to deal with a whole 20-minute episode. You can follow us at Start Here ABC. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.